Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the program Today's Issues for this Tuesday. I am the aforementioned Tim Wildman, and appreciate you listening to American Family Radio. Dr. Ray Pritchard's joining me to co-host from Dallas today. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Tim. How you doing?
Doing well.
Were you up late last night by any chance?
Indeed. College football is my favorite sport, so I'm not going to miss the championship game. Fred Jackson's in studio with us. Fred's news director for American Family Radio and OneNewsNow.com. Good morning, Fred.
And yes, by the end of the game, I was looking at the back of my eyelids.
Right. Yeah. Fred goes to, we were just talking about that. Fred goes to bed early.
Mm-hmm.
By early, you go to bed about 9:30?
9:30 is usually, yeah, around in there.
But you wake up early too, right?
I wake up around 4, but my wife's the night owl. And yeah. She's not a football fan, but she stayed up and watched the whole game last night.
Yeah. Allison and I, my wife, we're night owls too. We just go to bed somewhere around 11:30 or so. Yeah. By the way, let me just mention that our Facebook guru, Walker Wildman, is not here today. So Brent, our control board operator, is going to be doing that for us. You got us live streaming there?
We are live streaming at facebook.com/today's issues.
Today's Issues. You can watch the show there. Comment on the program. Your likes and likes about the show.
I saw what you did there.
Did you see what I did? A little sleight of hand there?
That's good. Your likes and your likes.
Walker's away on business. He's representing us in the nation's capital today at a very important meeting. So, and I'm serious about that. He is away. Said, text me earlier and said, hey, our plane got diverted. We were on our way to D.C. I don't know where it was, Memphis or Atlanta or somewhere, going to D.C. and said fog. Had been in the D.C. area and made them go. They're going to land at Reagan, and then decided the plane diverted to Charlottesville. So he was there, but he thought he was still going to make his meeting on time. But I didn't know it was so foggy in the nation's capital today.
Just watching a couple of live shots this morning. Yeah, it's quite foggy. I guess it's the warmer air moving up from the south, meeting that cold air in the north.
Well, you're the weather expert, Fred. I guess you're right. I'm going to take your word for it.
That's what happens.
On that one. Yeah, so Ray, you watched the Bama v. Georgia game last night?
You know, everybody who went to bed at halftime, they really missed the game, right? Because it was one game in the first half. It was something else in the second half.
Yeah.
A rather unbelievable ending because, Tim, didn't you think at halftime Georgia had the game under control?
Yes, but there was always that doubt in the back of your mind,
Never bet against Nick Saban.
Right, exactly. So, it was a great college football game, and I know a lot of folks in the country didn't like the fact that it was two teams from the same conference in the national championship game, but, hey, they were the two best teams. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just the way it worked out, but I think college football fans stayed up and watched the game, didn't care whether it was two teams from the same conference.
Two shocks for me, of course, getting up because I went to bed at halftime, was that Alabama won.
Don't admit that too much, Fred. Go ahead.
Alabama won. That was the first shock.
Right.
But that they changed quarterbacks.
Fred, do you realize what you just said?
What?
That Alabama winning was a shock.
I'm sorry. I went to bed pessimistic. Now, I was rooting for Alabama, one of the minority.
Yeah, we got a lot of
team.
Listeners in Georgia.
I know.
You're not supposed to pick sides.
I have a son-in-law who's Alabama all the way.
You have a family connection.
I got a family connection, so that's the way it is. But I was pessimistic going to bed. I even said to my wife, this game's over.
Yeah.
And I was wrong. But then I find out this morning that Saban switch quarterbacks to a freshman, a young man from Hawaii that was picked up. I never heard of this guy before, and Tego Velo, whatever his name is.
I don't know. I call him the Hawaiian dude.
The Hawaiian dude. I mean, this is a kid that comes in the middle of this game when your team is down, And I guess that's why
we're going to learn to pronounce his name, I assure you, because the kid is an excellent quarterback. But yeah, they changed quarterbacks. Start second. And the thing about it is, Ray, this young man who's from Hawaii, and I heard his post game interview.
Right.
Yeah. What a wonderful Christian young man.
This guy is.
Yeah. His first thing he said was when interviewed on the post game conference, and he was. Maybe he's 19. I don't know how old he is, but he's playing high school ball last year, and I'm watching him. And so was the Georgia quarterback, by the way. Very composed young man himself. He was playing high school ball last year. You remember playing high school ball last year, and now you're in the national championship game, and you're playing quarterback. Mm-hmm. But this young man for Alabama, again, we will learn to pronounce his name. It's a Hawaiian name, T-A-G.
O-V-A-I-L.
Let's ask Ray.
Yeah.
Ray travels the world. Ray, what is it?
Good luck.
Okay.
I looked at it.
But anyway, however you pronounce his last name.
We're all going to learn it.
He said, first thing I want to do is thank my Lord and my Savior, Jesus Christ.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah. And then I want to thank Coach Saban for giving me an opportunity in this game.
Yeah, he said, I don't know how Coach Saban found me.
Is that what he said?
I was watching.
I didn't see
how
that
he
part.
Found him. It's good scouting.
Oh yeah,
it's an amazing story.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just think about this, guys. Okay, it's the halftime of the national championship, mm-hmm. and Jalen Hurts had not played bad. He admittedly didn't have a great first half, right? But he wasn't the reason they were down 13-0. Really, Alabama's defense had given up too much to Georgia. Okay, so at the beginning of the second half. And to think about this, this is the most gutsy call I've ever seen in a national championship game of this nature. Jalen Hurts was 25-2 as a starter. Mm-hmm. 25-2. This year, he had thrown 17 touchdowns against one interception. Those are unbelievable statistics. And yet Nick Saban had the courage and the coaching staff had the courage to, and that's a gutsy call, because if it blows up in your face, you lose the national championship. All credit to Nick Saban.
Yeah.
And also to Jalen Hurts, a fine young man, because in his post-game interview, he handled himself very well also.
He did. Mm-hmm. Very classy. You know, he had to be killing him inside, knowing he wasn't playing well enough for his team, mm-hmm. that he was replaced on the field. But just a marvelous game. President Trump was there.
Yeah.
For the national anthem, was on the field.
Yeah, he was cheered, and this is how he was greeted last night. We actually have a little bit of audio here for you to listen.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight, as we honor our nation, please rise and welcome members of the ROTC units from the University of Georgia and the University of Alabama, joined by our President Donald J. Trump.
Yeah, you think it's? I guess with President Trump, there's no in between. Either you're cheering or you're booing, right?
That's right. That's right.
I think for the most part, it was a
cheer. Yeah. Even the Associated Press admitted for the most part, big cheers. Now there were a few boos, but for the most part, he was greeted very respectfully.
Yeah, and he sang the national anthem with the.
Yes,
I think that was a little bit of a dig at the NFL, don't you think, Ray?
Yeah, for him to be standing out there. Mm-hmm. During the national anthem. And some people said, well, he didn't even know the words to it or something. But it's hard to stand up there on the field and sing along. I thought he just handled himself well. Mm-hmm. And, Fred, I agree with you. That seemed like an overwhelmingly positive, 85 or 90% positive response to the president.
Well, the first part of it, he wasn't singing, or it seemed to be not. And then the last part of it, they showed him again. He was singing full blast. Mm-hmm. The thing about it is when you're out there on the field, you get reverberations, and you're not exactly sure.
Remember Sandy Rios was telling us the story. She sang at a couple of Bulls games when she lived in Chicago.
Bears.
And she said, Bears. And she said it was very difficult because you're singing, but it's, 2 seconds later, you're hearing that word.
Well, every once in a while you hear about a celebrity star who sings the national anthem, and they forget the words.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you're going to talk about that, that's just nitpicking on President Trump. Yeah. But the fact is, he was there at the game and got a warm welcome for the most part and saw a great national championship. I was wondering, the Secret Service probably took him out after halftime. I would guess.
He went home.
Yeah.
He actually left the
stadium. Oh, after the stadium. And yeah, security home. Reasons. You couldn't have the President of the United States trying to get out in traffic.
No.
You know, after the game. That'd be nuts. So he was there for the national anthem, then he went home.
No, he was stayed for the first half.
Oh, first half. Okay.
Yeah, and then went
and
home.
As Fred, as you said, the game was over at half anyway, right?
So yeah. He did what I did. He left.
Had his Big Mac and went home, huh?
That's right.
But you know what was interesting? We talked about this yesterday. There were some big protests planned. There were these groups. The mm-hmm. Antifa group was going to be outside, right. And they were going to make a big stink. Well, even the Associated Press said, well, there were a couple of dozen people out there with a couple little signs and really had no impact. And then the NAACP said they were going to be inside, and they wanted everybody to dress in white as a protest of some type. Well, that didn't happen. I did watch the stadium last night. There was a lot of red, and there was quite a bit of red colors there last night. I didn't see any overwhelming white colors inside, which is what they wanted to do in a protest. You know, and I got to thinking about that this morning when the description of the lack of protesters. How much of this protest against the president is amped up by the media who cover these things?
Right.
And you know, you can make something very small look very big with a TV camera. Mm-hmm. You can focus in on eight people with little mm-hmm. signs and shouting and that sort of thing. And you can call it a huge protest. There's great anger in the streets. So really, the media controls the narrative on the protest. Mm-hmm. But I thought it rather interesting. The AP even admitted there were a couple of dozen protesters outside. That's all it was.
Yeah.
Didn't amount to anything.
Well, it was a wonderful national championship game. And, you know, college football, as I said, is my favorite.
Yeah.
For sport, but it was just a magnificent ending to a great game. It was heartbreaking for Georgia, especially for their seniors
yes.
who worked so hard to get where they were and basically control the game for three quarters.
Yeah.
But if you're going to play Alabama, you have to play four.
Yeah.
You have to play four quarters. And then what Nick Saban has done at University of Alabama will never be repeated again, I don't think, in our lifetime. Was it five championships in 10 years or 9 years, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's just in the
and that's Bear Bryant territory, right?
Well,
there,
it's better. Right? It's better than yeah. Bear Bryant. Excuse the sacrilege to Alabama fans, although they would probably
send their emails to Tim, yeah. not to us.
Well, let me tell you why. Yeah, let me tell you why. I think it's more remarkable than Bear Bryant. Bear Bryant won six national championships at Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
I believe I'm correct on that.
I think that's right.
Nick Saban's won five. He won
since
one.
2009.
Yes.
He's won five
yes.
since 2009.
And he won one at LSU
mm-hmm.
as head coach. But here's the thing. It's, we live in the era of the conference championship and playoff. So Bear Bryant did not have to win a conference championship game, nor did he have to compete in playoffs. That's three more games you can lose. You know
right.
what I'm saying?
Right, right.
So that's why I think it's more impressive what mm-hmm. Nick Saban's done than even what Bear Bryant did,
mm-hmm.
although you can argue that. But maybe Alabama fans will argue that amongst
it's
themselves.
It's a different era, isn't it? There's yeah. much more parity.
Yeah. Yeah, anyway, a lot of fun, and we'll see. It'll be here before you know it. September will be here before you know it. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues. By the way, I wouldn't have wanted to be the Secret Service guy in charge of that one.
Huh? That's nice.
Hey, Bill, guess what your detail is this week? What? You're going to Atlanta to the national championship game with mm-hmm. 80,000 fans
yep.
Walking through, and, mm-hmm. and you got to be, you're responsible for security.
Yep.
For the president as he walked on the field. He walks on the field. They probably thought, well, he's going to be in a box, right? No, he's walking on the field
uh-huh.
in front of everybody.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Next story, Fred.
Well, earlier today, there was a meeting in Seoul, South Korea. And it was a delegation of officials from the South Korean government and the North Korean government. Yeah, you're hearing right. A delegation from the North Korea went down to Seoul. They were talking about the Olympics participation, and what we learned from all of this is that during the Olympics, which are coming up in a couple of weeks there in Seoul, there will be delegations of North Korea and South Korea marching together, And they've agreed, according to the meeting this morning, to reopen a military hotline. Now, you may be saying, wait a minute now. I thought things were really, really, really tense between South Korea and North Korea, and South Korea depending on the United States military force to protect it from the rather wacky leader of the North Koreans. And then all of a sudden, they made peace. They drank tea together, and everything seems okay.
Now, Fred, does this mean that they're just going to march in together, or are the North Koreans going to have skiers and bobsledders and all the rest of that?
They're going to march during the opening ceremony together.
But so they'll be as one united Korea, right?
Yes, but they'll have their own participants in the various sports. That's my understanding. But, I mean, it's still confusing. How do you go from threatening the very future of the South Koreans with nuclear weapons to sitting down to having tea and let's play sports together? I mean, that's hard to understand. And a lot of people are asking this morning, well, what does this mean? So, you know, South Korea depending on us, the United States, for protection against this guy who could try to blow things up at any moment. And then all of a sudden, South Korea, you're okay with them. And you're opening up military hotlines once again. So where does, now some people, there are two ways you can go on this. You can say, well, finally the North Koreans are perhaps admitting that their threats and their talk and all of that sort of thing, the United States has talked them down, and so they're willing to go on. But there's the other side that says to this may be interpreted by some as a bit of a snub to the United States.
Well,
by the South
yeah,
Koreans.
Yeah, you're right. There are two ways to look at that. You know, historically, the world has tried to put the Olympics ahead of international disputes or rivalries or even hated, you know, enemies. I remember the U.S., you know, used to compete all the time against the Soviets, you know, and we were in the Cold War. So it's not without, you know, it's not without precedent for that to take place. Even 1936, we went over and competed in the Olympics in, was it Munich?
Berlin.
Berlin.
Yeah.
Against, you know, with Nazi Germany rising there. Right. So, you know, I don't know, but I guess what the part that bothers me about this, Ray, is maybe it shouldn't bother me, is the South Koreans being so welcoming to the North Koreans, and in light of all these threats and missile tests that Kim Jong-un has been, you know, rattling the world with, and here the U.S. is trying to protect them and our allies and innocent people, and are we the bad guy now that we're, you know, we would be? Has the U.S. spoke out on this at all, this North Korean participation?
Haven't seen any comments. Of course, this meeting was just this morning where we learned about all of this, this meeting between South Korea and North Korea.
Yeah.
But, you know, just a few weeks ago, the United States military was holding exercises with South Korea.
Yeah.
You know, we saw pictures of the fighter jets taking off together and going up to the border and all of these. Just 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, that's no punishment for North Korea if they're letting them participate in the Olympic Games.
You're exactly right.
What do you think, Ray?
The only reason I can imagine is that maybe the South Koreans are saying to themselves, if we let the North Koreans come and march with us, you know, give them a little presence, then they won't bomb us. They won't launch missiles during the Olympics. I don't think that's really a good strategy because you know, Kim Jong-un has shown himself completely willing to shoot his own people whenever he feels like it. Mm-hmm. But I could imagine the South Koreans saying, we're buying a little bit of insurance by letting them do this. But it sure does look strange, Fred, after he's been launching missiles. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this latest one, intercontinental ballistic missile, the one that they say could hit the States. So why suddenly this guy's trying to wipe us out? Why are we palling around with him and welcoming his people to our Olympic Games? It really doesn't make much sense.
Yeah. Now, I know the history of the Olympic Games that you were mentioning, Tim, but this is a leader in North Korea who has threatened over and over and over again to wipe you off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
And you're going to make peace for the Olympics?
Yeah.
I just don't understand that. knowing, as Ray points out, that right after the Olympics are over, hey, we're back to threaten you with annihilation.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to make of that exactly. What's up next?
All right. We are learning more about these two FBI agents, one of them whose name is Peter Strzok, and his friend, who he had a romantic relationship with, Lisa Page, there at the FBI. We've mentioned their names before. Now, what has happened is there have been emails and text messages between these two individuals at the FBI. They were communicating with each other by email and text messages during the election campaign in 2016. And what we are learning, we're getting more information about the campaign inside the FBI to discredit then-candidate Donald Trump. Now, so we have a few excerpts from their emails back and forth, all right? According to this report, and this comes from The Hill, reported the House and Senate panels are looking now at these new text messages exchanged between these two people. They discussed news articles and strategized on how to react. One set of texts in late October 2016, just before the election, suggests they knew about a Wall Street Journal article in advance of it coming out. The text message was this, Page to Strzok. Boy, that was fast. Should I find and tell the team? And this has given rise to new speculation that these two in the FBI were feeding information to reporters. That's interesting. Boy, that was fast. The Wall Street Journal put out this story that they were, the allegation is suspicion, they were feeding reporters information. Should I, quote, find it and tell the team? The team. What are we talking about here? A team inside the FBI that was putting together strategy to discredit then-candidate Donald Trump. So now they're going through, there are hundreds of these emails and text messages between these two in particular. They're going through these, and what's emerging is this story of an effort by these high-ranking FBI officials to discredit then-candidate Donald Trump. The questions that have to be answered now is, who is on this team that they're referencing here? Mm-hmm. How far up does this go? Remember Andrew McCabe, who is still the assistant director of the FBI. His wife, Democrat candidate in Virginia. Mm-hmm. I think there is a case that's building. We're not there yet. There's a case that's building that there was a weaponization, a political weaponization of the FBI. Was James Comey involved? Still a question mark. A lot of people think he was.
Mm-hmm.
In an effort to discredit candidate Trump and to help candidate Hillary Clinton. But these apparently, these emails and text messages just have a treasure of information of all of this. And what's happening now is that you have a House committee and a Senate committee that's going to go through all of this, and we're going to find out a whole lot more. What's pointing here is collusion. You want to talk about collusion during the election campaign? Mm-hmm. There was collusion between the FBI and the media to discredit candidate Donald Trump.
Well, whether you can prove something in a court of law, I don't know, but I think Attorney General Jeff Sessions has enough right there to clean house at the at the FBI, and don't you think, Ray?
There's plenty of evidence there, if they are willing to act on it.
Yeah. Jeff Sessions, I just wonder, I'd like to be a fly on the wall with him right now, some of his meetings. I wonder how he feels about all this, because there's a lot of pressure on him to do something. He is doing a lot of good, mm-hmm. don't get me wrong, but it seems to be overwhelming what's coming at him and who's with him on his team, really.
Exactly.
Inside the FBI. We'll be back momentarily.
Next time on Today's Issues, we'll talk with a representative of the ministry, Preborn.
Preborn really is a twofold ministry. Even more important than saving the lives, as precious as that is, of unborn children, is the gospel of Jesus Christ.
We'll also talk with Dr. Gail Alexander, co-author of Who is in Control of the Church? And we'll have Abraham Hamilton III from the Hamilton Corner. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
If you like trips where you have to plan everything, then maybe our tour is not for you. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman with American Family Association and American Family Radio. Of course, I'm talking about our spiritual heritage tours of Washington, D.C., Mount Vernon, and then a separate trip to Williamsburg, Virginia. And guess what? We take care of everything. All you have to do is, as they say, show up. But we take these spiritual heritage tours twice a year, once in June and once in September. Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation, who is a historian, will be joining us for both tours, and he will tell you everything you need to know about the places, the times, the events that we will experience on these tours of Washington, D.C. and Williamsburg. For all the information, just go to the website spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com for everything.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Liberty University is preparing students to enter a competitive job market. They have a low student-to-professor ratio, a caring Christian faculty, and more than 550 programs of study, ranging from undergraduate certificates to doctoral degrees. As the largest Christian university in the world, Liberty continues to establish itself as both a leading liberal arts university and an institution dedicated to the Christian faith. Learn more at liberty.edu. That's liberty.edu. There's nothing better than a college football championship, and last night in Atlanta, well, that was one of the best. Congratulations to the Alabama Crimson Tide, beating the Georgia Bulldogs in overtime. Just an all-around great game with great fans in a great city. But there was one blemish in last night's festivities. An Alabama player, who I will not name, filmed screaming a profanity at President Trump. I posted that video on ToddStearns.com. Now, I do not know what is in that young man's heart, but I do know the words that came out of his mouth. And I'm certain he was not raised to talk like that, nor was he coached to talk like that. Quite frankly, the player should have been told to return to the locker room, take off his uniform, and leave the stadium. This is not the National Football League. It's the Southeastern Conference, and we expect our football players to conduct themselves as men of honor and decency. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We appreciate you listening to this program and to AFR throughout the day. It's Ray, Tim, and Fred here today on the program. Walker is not here today. So Brent is operating our Facebook page, and everything good there, Brent?
Yes, it is. We're humming on Facebook.
Live video streaming the show. If you want to check that out, Today's Issues Facebook, you can comment on the program there as well. We do read your comments. Don't read them as we go here. Can't do that. Walker can do that, but I can't. That's too much multitasking for me to do. But to appreciate you, those of you who watch and listen and on our Facebook page. And we have an app, too, app for your smart device, be it a phone or an iPad or similar type device. You can download the app, and then you can listen anywhere in the world to American Family Radio 24/7, as long as you got high-speed internet connection. So thousands and thousands of people, many internationally, do take advantage of that. And of the app and watch us, listen at least there on the application. And the great thing about it, Fred and Ray, is that, you know, we're not limited now to just our terrestrial radio stations, mm-hmm. Which we have 184 of those across the country. I'm talking about with a tower. Now with the internet being such and apps being the ones, well, you can have access to radio anywhere. You don't have to have mm-hmm. a tower. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Joining us now is Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association and host of Sandy Rios in the Morning here on AFR each weekday morning. Sandy joins us most Tuesdays, that she's available to comment on some things in the news we want to ask her about. And Sandy joins us now. Good morning, Sandy.
Good morning, Tim. Am I supposed to say Roll Tide? Is that what you say?
Well, that's a that right? That's a way to divide the audience. Yes, well, you have a large contingent of Alabama fans out there across the country.
Trust me, I am Switzerland.
Okay. Well, then you have human nature. It's Alabama versus human nature. Human nature is you know the old
in Alabama's
don't
gonna win.
Don't hate me because I'm beautiful. Thing. Well, I'm going to hate you anyway because you're beautiful. And so, when it's kind of what the Patriots are getting with New England. You win enough, people get sick and tired of watching you win, unless you're a fan of that school. Uh-huh. In which case, you say, "What? You're jealous?" And you say,
"You know,
yes,
I know I what you. I know exactly what you mean. Yeah. The Cubs have that same problem."
Yeah,
this big win, and people are so jealous.
The lovable losers.
Yeah.
They did win one world championship.
Well, they have one too.
But anyway, yeah, that's now people. Now that's when you get America pulling for you for the most part. When you're traditionally a loser, and then you rise up and you win a championship, then everybody can cheer for you. But when you win year after year after year after year, a lot of people get tired of watching. No, so no, you probably shouldn't say Roll Tide Roll right now, except for our Tide fans. Hey, by the way, Sandy, I don't know if you probably, it was late in your time zone, but the young man for the University of Alabama who played the second half for quarterback, he gave a wonderful testimony after the game.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, he's freshman, 18 years old, very composed, a young man from Hawaii, Fred Nor. Ray, or I can pronounce his last name yet. I'm sure we will. But he just said, "Hey, I want to give praise to my Lord and my Savior." He said, "My Lord and my Savior, Jesus Christ, for allowing me this opportunity." So that was refreshing to see. And I know the young man from Georgia too, the quarterback there. Mm-hmm. Ironically, the young man from Georgia, Jake Fromm, who was a true freshman, mm-hmm. and this kid from Alabama. Are really close friends.
Are you serious?
Yeah, because they went to high school camps together because they were both elite quarterbacks in uh-huh. high school, and they're like texting buddies. They're really close friends.
Wow.
So they were talking about that.
I wonder if they were texting during the second half.
Maybe that was the problem. Hey, for Georgia.
Yes.
Hey, can I ask a question?
Yes.
Well, what did I didn't watch? You know, because I do go to bed like before those things start. What did you guys think about the reaction to President Trump? Did you watch it?
Well, we talked about that earlier. Of course, Fred, he goes to bed at 6, so he didn't get to see it. But we played that earlier in the program.
Yeah, the cheers. I think for the most part, it was a cheering audience when he walked out in the field there with, I guess it was the ROTC members from.
Yeah, for the national anthem.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I thought he got it. Did you get a different impression, Sandy? Or
no, I did not. But I only saw one clip, you know. And mm-hmm. people can, you know, it depends on their point of view, and you can hear anything. But it sounded wonderful. But in terms of his support,
yeah.
I actually was worried about him being there last night. That seems so dangerous to me.
We were talking about that earlier. Can you imagine the Secret Service detail? That had to be used in that situation. You're not talking about a man's president who – a lot of presidents go to Super Bowls or national sporting events like this, mm-hmm. championship events, and they sit in a box, for example. But here the president was actually on the field.
Yep.
I know. That was a little scary to me.
Yeah.
But,
and it was announced a few days in advance before he went. Of course, I'm sure they had – massive security and metal detectors and everything like that, but still, you don't usually find a president exposed in a crowd that size. Exposed, but it was inside, inside. Mm-hmm. All right, Sandy, we were talking earlier here, the ongoing saga of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And what's being exposed over there with these emails and these texts that are being released? Fred posed to Sandy that question about the team you mentioned.
Well, these are the emails that are being exchanged. And Sandy, I know you're familiar with this because you sent me a story by Sarah Carter this morning about all of this. and it involves these two people, Peter Strzok and his lawyer romantic friend Lisa Page, exchanging these emails. And the latest coming out of these emails that we're finally getting access to, and the committees in the Senate and the House are going through, is that they were talking about getting information basically out to reporters. The Wall Street Journal, they wanted to get to know a reporter at the New York Times. And there was one in particular, Sandy, that was quoted in a Fox News story this morning. They discussed, speaking of Strzok and Page,
FBI agents agents, I don't know their proper titles, but they're still there.
They're still there. They discussed news articles and strategized on how to react. One set of texts in late October 2016, just weeks before the election day, suggests they knew about a Wall Street Journal article in advance. After Page alerted Strzok to the piece's publication, Strzok responded, "Boy, that was fast. Should I find it and tell the team?" Now, that triggered an interest in me, Sandy. Tell the team. That speaks of a whole group at the FBI that's working to get information out to reporters about collusion going on inside the FBI to try to bring Trump down as a candidate.
Well, Fred, it's likely that it even means more than a team just trying to get it out to media. It's probably, according to what I'm reading, and how do we know yet, but the indications from the inside, from people that should know something, is that it's really a concerted effort, a deep state. We've been hearing about this, but an intricate effort to get President Donald Trump out of office, to prevent him, first of all, from being elected, and then to destroy him afterwards at the very top levels of our national security. You know, there's a guy who writes by the name of Sundance, and he writes for Conservative Treehouse. I know, Fred, that you're familiar with some of his stuff. He has been tracking this in such great detail. In fact, I've tried to relay some of it to my audience. I think I've given them brain freeze. But I think he would say, and I think he's probably right, that at the very top level of this is James Clapper, who was overseeing all the various, each intelligence agency has its own pocket of protected information, and that's why they formed this office that would oversee all of it. Remember, they talked about the barriers, the walls between the intelligence agencies, and so they created a new agency, and the head of that, the first head, was James Clapper, and he was able to access all of this information. Also, we're learning that the President of the United States gets his own intelligence briefing each morning. You know that. But prior to President Obama, it was only like the president, maybe the vice president, maybe one other person who saw that. But under Obama, he was distributing it to at least 30 people who were distributing to other people. And this is so highly classified. It contains names and numbers. So my point is, the intelligence agencies, including the FBI, were so thoroughly corrupted and cooperating. The lines between them are frightening. And so the wheels are coming off the bus. Now, I can't say that I have confidence that people are going to be brought to justice and we're going to get to the bottom of all of it, because honestly, it's so deep. We pull back one layer, we see another. Tim, you know, just to be specific about Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, they were Peter Strzok was overseeing the Clinton email investigation. He was he was the one who interviewed Mrs. Clinton and didn't do it under oath. He was the one that released Mrs. Clinton's staff, didn't take their laptops, even though they lied under oath, didn't charge them with anything. I could go on and on. Lisa Page was working for Mueller on the Russian collusion thing. And also Peter Strzok was in charge of the Russian collusion investigation, alleged Russian collusion. So these are not just any agents.
Yeah, let me ask you this, Sandy. Then Ray, I know you have a question for Sandy, but I don't understand. Now, the Justice Department, you know, in Washington, D.C., the Federal Justice Department is run by the Attorney General of the United States, who is Jeff Sessions. I'm just giving people a civics lesson who really don't understand who falls under who. Okay, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI, is under the auspices of the Justice Department. So Jeff Sessions and his team there oversee the work of the FBI for them. Okay. So I don't understand, Sandy, given what we know, what you've just talked about, what's out in the media, what's been exposed through these emails and texts that have become public. Fred talked about it. Everybody, why is this Strzok? Is that his name?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Why is he still getting a paycheck from the FBI?
I think there's a real simple answer, Tim. It's not a right answer. It's very hard to get rid of any federal employee. You know that, don't you? You can't fire them. And so, I mean, you can. You can, technically, absolutely. But it's not easy. There are all these. There's the Agents Association defending them. There's due process. There's all these rules and procedures. So yeah. We're not there yet. And, of course, we wouldn't want people to be fired without proof. Yes, you can argue that there's proof. But I'm just saying, you'd want to make sure that there's a reasonable threshold met before someone was I think he should be fired. I'm not saying I don't, but yeah. I'm just telling you that's why.
Now FBI agents are human. They're not robots. They have political feelings like anybody else, and they're due to their own opinions on matters like this. But that's fine. But when it goes from you're going to vote for a Democrat or Republican to you're going to work to discredit a candidate who could become the president of the United States, that's taking it to a whole nother level. An unethical level, and is beneath the professionalism and the tradition of what we've come to expect from, you know, one of the most esteemed organizations in America and respected over our country's history, and that's the FBI. Go ahead, Ray. I know you want to ask Sandy a question.
Sandy, you mentioned James Clapper. Just for the benefit of our listeners, just review for us who he was, why he's important, and how do you think he figures in this whole unfolding scenario?
Well, I James Clapper was the former head of the Defense Intelligence Agency. Hang on a second. I need to get my nouns here correctly because you asked me this. He was appointed by Barack Obama, and the director of national intelligence. He was the guy that was put in charge. He was not these agencies and their acronyms all run together sometimes in your mind, at least they do in mine. But he was the former director of the national intelligence under President Obama. I think that James Clapper has proven himself to be a liar under oath in Congress. He's contradicted himself. And I would say that people who are tracking this particular scandal or scandals, plural, would say that James, all these lines pass back to James Clapper, that he was the one overseeing all of this, all the while acting like sometimes like, oh, shucks, he's just a regular guy. He's really a consummate liar if you've seen him under oath. But if you don't know he's lying, you can't tell because he's not obvious. He's a very dangerous person. That's the way I view him because he's convincing. You think he's a good guy when in fact he's not. So he was in power for many years, and I think he oversaw much of what happened. John Brennan was also in the middle of this, too. John was the head of the CIA. And Ray, John Brennan was a former member of the Communist Party. He voted for the Communist Party candidate in the 80s, not even that long ago. Some say, have told me, that they believe he converted to Islam when he was assigned to Saudi Arabia. So he's another character that was appointed by Barack Obama, who did a lot of damage.
Sandy, I think is it sounding over the air like I'm hearing on my earphones? Okay, Sandy, I think Sandy, say your name and your
my rank and serial number.
Yeah, there you go. We're having a little bit of difficulty with the connection, but Sandy, thank you much for your time. Tomorrow morning, you can join Sandy at 7:05 a.m. Central Time on American Family Radio, as you can each weekday morning. Here to keep up with the latest news and especially what's happening in our nation's capital with our Director of Governmental Affairs, Sandy Rios. Sandy, have a great day. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Tim.
Okay, bye-bye.
You know what Sandy was describing there, and you know, it's kind of like if you're making a documentary, you pull the camera back to get this big picture.
Yeah.
So that people understand, you've heard terms like weaponizing departments, et cetera, et cetera. You have James Clapper, who was over basically these various intelligence agencies, but his boss was Barack Obama. And a scenario that is not so far out of the realm of reality is that President Barack Obama weaponized these various departments to go after his political enemies and to aid those that he thought would help him.
And to protect Hillary Clinton.
And to protect Hillary Clinton. This has been talked about, and the left has said, oh, no, you're crazy. This didn't happen. But as more and more, for instance, these text messages between these two FBI agents comes out, this is the picture that is getting a little clearer. We're not there yet, but the intelligence committees of the House and the Senate are going through these texts.
Yeah.
What's coming about is the dossier. You remember this dossier that was put together by this group that has connections inside these various departments to discredit the president, who then we got the unmasking thing going on, and names are being investigated because of this unmasking. What you have just developing here is a web of deep deceit. This is why we're calling it deep state stuff. On top of all of this, we're learning more about Uba Abedin, Hillary Clinton's right-hand woman when she was Secretary of State, putting classified emails on her husband's, Anthony Weiner's, laptop. Now we know that this, first it was dismissed as just regular emails. No, this was classified information that was put out there. And we're learning more. I think Uba Abedin, there is real potential for her to be charged at some point. She was so reckless with this stuff.
Right.
So how many different congressional investigations are there now? I got to say, kudos to the House Republicans, because it seems to me they have really stayed on this. Mm-hmm. Because the major media, Washington Post, New York Times, CNN, they've done everything they can to sweep this under the rug, poo-poo
That's
it,
right.
make excuses for the Democrats. Kudos to the House Republicans, because they have been on this like a dog chewing on the bone, and they're not going to let go. I hope they don't stop now.
What's the gentleman's name who's the FBI agent? Strzok? Is that his name?
Strzok, Peter Strzok.
He was the one in charge of the Hillary Clinton investigation?
That's right.
Now, from what Sandy described a few minutes ago, it didn't sound like to me he was the chief investigator. It sounded like to me he was Hillary's lawyer.
Well,
doing the best he could to protect her, if all what Sandy was saying is true, and it is, because it's been reported and exposed. You know, to me, guys, I'm sometimes a simple man. Some things are pretty obvious. All I need to know about this whole deal is that he didn't put Hillary Clinton under oath.
That's right. That's a fact.
That's all I need to know.
Right. That's a fact.
Right. So you can tell me everything else you want to tell me about the investigation the FBI did of Hillary Clinton, but if you're not going to put her under oath, then you're protecting her from potential political damage, which at the time they thought could affect the election and perhaps lead to her loss, which she ultimately lost anyway. But, I mean, Ray, is that...
Is he the one who changed the wording from
from
gross
yes.
negligence
yes.
to extreme carelessness?
Yes. Yeah. And he's still there.
And he's still there.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess Jeff Sessions could fire him, couldn't he? He's his boss, right?
Well,
ultimately.
Yeah, he is. And this is one of the things that, you know, conservatives are scratching their heads about. Why isn't Jeff Sessions stepping up to the plate and doing something about this? Many people, regular folks would say there's enough evidence out there right now about Peter Strzok in particular that he should be gone, because it's dangerous for him to be in a position where he is right now to still have information and to influence the investigation of which he is in the spotlight.
You add all this to Attorney General at the time, Loretta Lynch, meeting in a private meeting with in an airplane on a tarmac in Phoenix or wherever they were out there.
Yep.
A half an hour meeting, and her agency is supposed to be investigating Hillary Clinton, and she's high fiving, Bill Clinton, and she didn't recuse herself after that, did she?
Nope.
These people, I mean, it's actually the corruption, and they talk about President Trump colluding with Russia. I mean, and how long is that going to go on? I mean, long is that going
to
go on?
There's got to be.
And what are they going to prove?
Well, they haven't proven a stitch yet. There's nothing. There is absolutely nothing there. And as we suggested before Christmas, Mueller should be put on a deadline. You got something, you tell us by March or it's all over.
That's what President Trump should do. I think Ed Vitagliano came up with that idea. Mm-hmm. He should put a, you know, I don't know, what are you going to say? End of April, end of May, if you don't have anything,
yep,
then we're going to close down your investigation. Mm-hmm. So anyway, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. By the way, a story that hasn't got a lot of attention, and that is the unemployment rate among black workers in America is at its lowest since the early 1970s.
That's right.
Now, what's causing this? Well, more job opportunities for everybody, including black Americans. And you could, what, well, why is that, you might ask? Well, I think it is the optimism and the, what do they call it, consumer
confidence
of the American right. people are leading to a better economy. Mm-hmm. And what's that attributable to? I think it's to President Trump's economic philosophy and business background and the tax cuts and the tax reforms that came recently were anticipated and were fulfilled. Mm-hmm. So I think this is good news for everybody, and certainly according to CNBC website, the black unemployment rate of 6.8% in December was the lowest since the Bureau of Labor Statistics started tracking it in 1972. So, Ray, this is good news for everybody, but certainly for African Americans.
Well, it is, and Mr. Trump pointed that out in one of his tweets yesterday, that the Democrats want your vote. They're doing nothing for you. They've never done anything for you. Look at what I've done. Look how low the unemployment rate is. And I think he's exactly right to talk about that. And, you know, the Hispanic unemployment rate is near the lowest it's ever been. So, you know, people make a lot of fun about this rising tide lifts all boats, but it's a fact. A rising tide does do that. And I think as long as the stock market is good and the economy is humming along, the Republicans are going to carry the election in November, because when you get down to everything, get down to the bottom line, people vote their pocketbooks. And, you know, there's a lot of people who starting next month are going to have more money in their pocket because of this new tax bill that was signed. So the president, I think, has every right to brag and crow about that, because that's a huge accomplishment.
We had an Associated Press story on this just a few days ago, and as Ray was mentioning, among Hispanics or Latino ethnicity, the unemployment rate now is 4.9%. That's down a full point in 1 year. And here's one more. The unemployment rate amongst veterans of the Iraq-Afghanistan war now stands at 3.3%, also at its lowest level in years. So it's not just, you know, the president goes out there and says, isn't the economy great? Well, he's got all these stats coming out. These are without dispute, these stats. These are government stats coming from government agencies. And it's not somebody cooking the books on this. These are actual facts.
Yeah.
So you can't, you know, the left is trying to say other things, or they just don't do the stories.
Yeah. I think the Democrat Party should be worried about this, and they probably are, because they count on 90% of the African-American community voting for them.
Mm-hmm.
Hispanics probably vote 60-65% for Democrats. And so the Democrat Party needs to keep those minorities dependent on them.
Yes.
Or government programs, okay? Mm-hmm. And if they shake free of that in large numbers and start having a lot of job opportunities and moving to the middle class, it's going to harm the Democrat Party. You can see how that would work. We'll be back in 5 minutes after this short timeout for more Today's Issues on American Family Radio.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.